Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello and good morning. How are you today? Welcome to a new edition of Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. Every Sunday morning from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, I'm here to talk to you in English about Madrid, about the province of Madrid or La Comunidad de Madrid, about the world, about Spain, about myself. In English, sometimes in Spanglish to help you. If I say something that perhaps you don't know, I'll try to translate it for you. My name's Richard Vaughn, Richard Baugan. Vaughn is the pronunciation. The correct pronunciation of my last name is Vaughn, con V, que suena V inglesa, que es como una F vibrada, Fawn. Para dominar la V en inglés, hay que decir la F y vibrarlo con las cuerdas vocales. Imagina fofo y fofito, o sea, de miliquito, etc. Fofo y fofito, eran hermanos, fofo y fofito, y decir fofo y fofito con las cuerdas vocales activadas, vovo y vovito, fofo, vovo. Y así lo tenemos. O que el jugador de fútbol Figo, que vive en Vigo, Vigo, etc. So you need to make an effort with the V in English, because the V is a very soft and very attractive sound. Victory, Valencia, yes, vivacious, vivaz. With a B, la B en inglés es explosiva y moco bruta. Baba. Babaloo. Babaran. Baba, baba, babaran. Yes, when you say Valencia, it sounds hard in English. Valencia. But in any case, I'm not here to talk about phonetics. I'm not here to talk about the phonetics of the English language or to grammar. I'm here to talk about Madrid. And I'm introducing myself as Richard Vaughn. In Spain, I say Baugan, because it's very difficult for Spanish speakers to say Vaughn. And if I need to call a restaurant to make a reservation by telephone, if I say, they say, ¿de parte quién? And I say, Richard Vaughn. ¿Cómo? So I say, Richard Baugan. Ah, señor Baugan. No problem. Es como decir colgate para la pasta cuando se, en inglés es Colgate. Pero si dicen Colgate, no venden pasta. So I say Baugan. So my name is Richard Vaughn. I'm an English teacher. I'm here to indirectly teach English. Courtesy of Onda Madrid y Telemadrid. Courtesy of Onda Madrid, Telemadrid. I'm here every Sunday morning from 10 to 11. And it's fun. I have a good time. I enjoy this. And I'm using my lifeline, my life, in Madrid as the background or the base of operations or the starting point for speaking to you in English. And I started last October in 1972 when I first came to Spain as a student. And now I'm in 1983. So I have progressed 11 years, or 10 years, yes, 11 years, over a period of almost 6 months. Yes, almost 6 months. Well, October, November, December, January, February, yeah, five. We're in February now, so it's four and a half months it has taken me to cover 11 years of my life, and there are a lot more years, so... Me tienes para rato, eh? You have me for a long time. But I enjoy it, and I hope that you enjoy it, and I hope that you can benefit from my weekly hour speaking in English, because indirectly, I'm teaching the language. I'm exposing you to native English speech. I'm from Texas and Oklahoma. I grew up my first 9 years in Houston, Texas. My second 9 years in Tulsa, Oklahoma, just north of Texas. And then the next 2 years in Dallas, Texas, attending the university. And then my third year, the third university year, I came to Madrid, to the Complutense, for a gap year, or what you would call un Erasmus, is the most common word in Spanish. And then I went back, I returned. I transferred to a different university, the University of Texas in Austin, the capital, Austin. And there I finished my degree. And in 1974, I returned to Spain a second time with the intention of staying, with the idea of staying, with the intention of staying in Madrid or in Spain for 2 years only to perfect my mastery of the Spanish language, and then to return to Texas to do a doctorate in Spanish language and literature. Now, those 2 years that I came to Madrid after graduating from the University of Texas, I needed to make ends meet. To make ends meet, llegar a fin de mes, económicamente. I needed to make ends meet. I needed to get by. I needed to make a living. I needed to earn a living. I needed to pay the rent and buy food. And so I started working as an English teacher. Hasta hoy, cadena perpetua. I never went back to the States except to visit my parents or on vacation, because very soon I realized that I had learned a trade that people in Spain appreciated and valued. Yes, I learned a trade. Escrito trade. Trade in English, in Spanish, has many different meanings. Comercio. Comercio exterior is foreign trade. La balanza comercial is the trade balance. Un déficit comercial is a trade deficit. Un superávit comercial is a trade surplus. Escrito surplus, pronunciado surplus. Como si, señor, yes, sir, y luego plus. Plus, surplus. And but a trade also means un oficio. Aprendí un oficio. I learned a trade, which was teaching English. And I became a good teacher. People liked my classes very, very much. And so the demand began to grow. I spent 1 year, almost 1 year, in a nuclear plant in Zorita, La Central Nuclear, in 1974 and part of 1975. And then I came back to Madrid from Guadalajara and until today. I started my company in 1977. And I'm still working with my company, yes, with 440 teachers. A big company now. Yes, started from a molecule. My company started from a molecule, molecula. Y de ahí un imperio. De molecula, imperio. Imperio pequeño. A small empire, not... Amancio Ortega has a big empire. Me, a small, very small empire compared to Amancio. But it's possible in Spain to go from 0 to 100. It requires patience, hard work, perseverance, focus, persistence, and the ability to manage people, más que nada, gestionar las personas, to manage people. But I repeat, last October with Onda Madrid. I'm very grateful to Telemadrid and Onda Madrid for this opportunity because it's enjoyable. I enjoy it very much. And I think it's a very fine gesture. Buen gesto, buen detalle, buen gesto de parte de Onda Madrid. It's a very fine gesture on the part of Onda Madrid to offer English to its listeners in La Comunidad de Madrid. And that's what I'm here to do. And so today, I have reached the year 1983. Am I married or single? Well, I'm married. My wife, Fernanda, she's Spanish and yes, gata, she's from Madrid. Although she has interesting blood. She has blood. My wife is an interesting... José Vasconcelos, a Mexican novelist and essayist, he said, la raza cósmica, una mezcla. And so my wife is a mixture of, let's see, abulense, gallega, what else? Let's see, one, two... Aurense Gallega, Africa Subsahariana, and one I Sevillana. Hold on, just a second. Let's see. Her grandparents. Okay, her grandparents. Four. Her four grandparents. One was from Cuba, but he was black. One was from... let's see, one was from Galicia. She was Marquesa, she was a Marquis. One was from Avila, one from Segovia, Valle del Tabladillo, a very, very small, a tiny village, Valle del Tabladillo, and very near Sepúlveda. And from the, from Avila, she another grandparent is from Sotila Granada, and then another was from Galicia, but I don't know where in Galicia, and another was from Cuba. He was born in Cuba and became very wealthy, un indiano más que nada, but indiano, africano, and he went to Seville. It's a long story, and for 25 years he was the consul, the Spanish consul in Lisbon. Interesting fellow. So that's my wife. Now me, I'm very Anglo-Saxon. Mis cuatro apellidos, Vaughan, Adams, Campbell, Crosby. Vaughan is Welsh, Gales. Adams is English, Campbell is Scottish. And Crosby, like Bing Crosby, is Irish. So I'm very much part of the British Isles, although the four branches of my family have spent maybe three centuries in America. So I'm probably more a product of America, North America, than a product of the British Isles. But in any case, here I was married. I am still married to the same woman. And in 1983, I had a daughter, a three-year-old daughter. And my wife was expecting, at the end of 1983, my wife was expecting my son, a son. And so, because my son was born in 1984, on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, Fiesta Nacional Mexicana. And so she was pregnant with our son at the end of 1983. Now, was 1983 an important year? Of course. Every year is important. There's not one year. Well, you could say maybe 1945 was more important than 1946, but that's not really true. Every year is important. And I was living in 1983 on Virgen del Val, a street in Barrio Concepcion, in a rented flat of 92 square meters. In 1983, I had probably, I don't remember, probably 20 corporate clients, clientes, empresas como clientes, personas jurídicas, and maybe about 25 teachers working for me in 1983. I don't remember. But it was a good business. And the office of my business was in a corner of my bedroom. I didn't need more than simply a telephone, a computer or word processor. I don't remember which. Un 30 procesador de textos o marca Olympia, I think. An Olympia word processor in 1983. And a printer, of course. And I could manage my business from there. Now, every year I went to SEMO. SEMO was the, what do you call it? It was La Feria de Informatica, SEMO. They no longer have this, but it used to. First, I went every year and spent 2 or 3 days, maybe 2 hours, maybe about 5 or 6 hours every year in SEMO, first in the Casa de Campo, in the Palacio de Cala, in the Sala Exposiciones, in the show, how do you say that? The exhibition hall of the Casa de Campo. Then later, of course, it was moved to La Feria, how do you say, Recinto Ferial Juan Carlos I, in Parque Juan Carlos, in that area. And so, IFEMA, that's the word they say for it, IFEMA. SEMO moved to there, but then SEMO stopped around the year 2000. I don't remember when. But every year I spent several hours in order to improve the efficiency of the management of my teachers and my clients. And every year for the first 20 years of my company, I was the computer expert, database management expert, and I spent quality time and quantity time learning database management, la gestión de bases de datos, y el virtual basic and things. And I spent a lot of time in SEMO. And I recommend to any person who is an entrepreneur or wants or aspires to start a company, to begin a startup, to become very good in computers and to understand what computer technology can provide for you. And now, of course, artificial intelligence as well. It's very, very important. 1983, I was living in a rented flat of only 792 square meters. I'm a very conservative and very frugal person. I don't spend a lot of money. But in any case, what was happening in 1983? What was happening? Well, what was happening in Spain? Well, 1983 was a consolidation of autonomous communities. Castilla y León became the Estatuto de Autonomía was approved for various regions. Castilla y León, Madrid, La Comunidad de Madrid, data del año 83, from this year, the year I'm talking about, Extremadura and the Balearic Islands, Extremadura. In English, la X suena, decimos Extremadura. The word Extremadura originates from the Middle Ages, más allá del Duero, las regiones más allá, o sea, al sur del Duero en la Reconquista, Extremo Duero, o sea, Extremo Douro, Extremo Douro, como Extramuros, Intramuros, in Toledo, for example, or Ávila, we had Extremo Duro, Douro, más allá del Duero, and that became the name of Extremadura. So that's the origin of the word, in case you don't know. And so Madrid, as a comunidad autónoma, as an autonomous community, was official in 1983. What else was happening in 1983? Well, ETA was very active, so active that the government, under Felipe González, created GAL. Yes, yes, the Grupo Antiterrorista de Liberación. That created additional problems with the dirty war against the Basque separatists. And who was the mayor of Madrid? Well, the mayor of Madrid was el profesor, el viejo profesor, Enrique Tierno Galván. And he won re-election, I believe, in 1983. And also, Joaquin Leguina became the first president of the new community of Madrid. And so, politically, basically, that was what was happening. Economically, well, Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States, and the economy was starting to pick up. But it was still tough in Madrid, economically. But I'll be back after a short break to tell you more. Take care.
Teatralia, el Festival Internacional de Artes Escénicas para todos los públicos, sube el telón del 7 al 30 de marzo. Teatro, circo, títeres, música, danza y artes visuales procedentes de hasta 12 países llegan a teatros de toda la región. Venta de entradas en madrid.org/teatralia, Comunidad de Madrid.
Porque los toros son cultura, son arte, son espectáculo.
Los domingos de 11 a 12 de la noche, El Toril con Julio Martínez, en Onda Madrid.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
Llega Art Madrid. Ven a celebrar con nosotros 20 años de arte contemporáneo con 34 galerías y más de 200 artistas nacionales e internacionales. Forma parte de una experiencia única y disfruta de las nuevas tendencias artísticas en fotografía, pintura, escultura, performance y video. Feria de Arte Contemporáneo Art Madrid, del 5 al 9 de marzo en la Galería de Cristal del Palacio de Cibeles.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. All right, we're talking about the year 1983 in Madrid and in the world and in Spain as well, but more specifically in Madrid. In Spain, the restructuring, it was what you remember, maybe you remember the Reconversión Industrial. This was very important in the first government of Felipe González. Felipe González was voted into power. Fijaos como lo digo, he was voted into power. Entró en el poder mediante votación. He was voted into power in December 19... Oh, no. I think it was October or November 1982. But the government didn't begin until December, I believe, 1982. So 1983 was the first full year. And I remember that the government was very aggressive, quite active in Las Autovías, you remember? Because up to that time, up to 1983, up to the first government of Felipe González, the very, very few highways were four-lane highways, or what you would call autovías or autopistas. I remember in 1982, before the González government came to power, the only autopistas or autovías in Spain were between Madrid and Colmenar Viejo. I remember that. Strange. between Sevilla and Cádiz, Seville and Cádiz, and between Zaragoza and Barcelona, the autopista, which is very good. Still, it's one of the best in Spain. And that was it. I remember 10 years earlier hitchhiking around Madrid, around Spain. I remember the Burgos Highway, two lanes, one lane in direction of Burgos and one lane in the direction of Madrid. And still, every day I had to drive to Getafe or to Leganés because my two most important clients, John de Ribérica y Ericsson, were located in those two cities, respectively. Bedroom communities. Ciudades dormitorio, solemos decir en inglés, bedroom como alcoba o dormitorio, bedroom community. Two bedroom communities, important, Getafe and Leganés. And I went there every day, and the highway, the road from Plaza Elíptica, Fernández Ladreda today, to Getafe, it was one lane in the direction of Toledo and one lane in the direction of Madrid. Soon after that, no. But it was an arduous task every morning, driving to Getafe or to Leganés, and vice versa, returning to Madrid. And the M30 was not finished yet. In the época del Puente de los Tres Ojos, down near the Estación de Abrondigal. It's interesting about Madrid. I'm not sure if I'm completely correct. If you have better information, write to me. But the M30 on the eastern side was the Abrondigal, el río o el riachuelo, arroyo Abrondigal, and that's the path of the M30, and it goes down all the way almost to the river, to the Manzanares, and then Paseo La Castellana and the Paseo Recoletos and the Paseo del Prado was the Bajo Abrondigal, affluente, tributary. In English, para affluente río decimos tributario, que tributa a un affluente. Tiene sentido. It's a tributary. The Bajo Abrondigal was a tributary of the Abrondigal, and it traveled down the Castellana, Paseo Recoletos, Paseo del Prado, and then down Méndez Álvaro, all the way down to where you have the Estación de Autobuses. And there it entered the Abrondigal. And the Abrondigal continued down to the Manzanares, right there. I think. I'm not sure about the name of the Bajo Abrondigal. There are a lot of arroyos, or a lot of creeks and streams under Madrid. Because a lot of good water comes down from the Guadarrama. Madrid is very ideally situated for water. In fact, the water in Madrid, the tap water in Madrid, could be ranked number one in the world. I don't know. But I know that I've traveled to hundreds of different cities in my life, in the United States and in Europe, in Africa, in the Far East, in the Middle East, and the tap water in Madrid is by far the best. Is by far the best. Many people say that the tap water is better than any of the brands of bottled water. I don't know, but I prefer the tap water in Madrid over bottled water. I always say agua del ayun. You can say eso que agua es. No, del ayuntamiento. Okay. It sounds more sophisticated to say agua del ayun. And so it's, but in any case, what was happening in 1983 economically? Well, the reconversion del carbón, you know, in Asturias, and the reconversion of the steel industry, you know, Altos Hornos and Incidesa in Asturias and things. The socialists were making a lot of changes, you know, la ley de educación and things. They started La Primitiva. Do you remember the Primitiva? That was started in 1983. And who won the league? Well, Athletic de Bilbao in 1983. They won the league and the Copa. Un doble. Okay. It's a very good year. In fact, 2 years in a row, Athletic de Bilbao was the league champion. That was a strange period of time. In 1981 and 82, Real Sociedad was the champion. And then 83 and 84, Athletic Bilbao. So for 4 years, the Basque Country had the league champion. That has never happened again in the history of Spanish football. But in any case, it was interesting. And that was the period when we had Juanito. And that was right at the beginning. In 1983, we had the La Quinta del Buitre was playing for Castilla. And so it was very soon, Butragueño, Michel, and the rest, Pardetha, who went to Zaragoza. But in any case, it was an interesting period for football, very different. And in Madrid specifically, I told you that Joaquin Leguina became the president of the community. And El Viejo Profesor Tierno Galván was elected as the mayor for the second time. All right. And the metro, the underground system, was expanded. The Madrid metro is very, very good, by the way. For me, it's maybe the best in the world as well. I have used the metro in New York, the underground, or the subway in New York. I've used the subway in Paris a lot. I've used the subway in London. And I've used the subway in Moscow. Now, the subway in Moscow is very, very good. It's very beautiful. It's marble with statues. It's very, very beautiful. The subway system in Paris is very, very good and very inexpensive, similar to Madrid. But Madrid is a very good system. Now, Madrid has no reason to envy any other underground transport system or transit system. It's a very good system. I've always found that public transport in Madrid is good. Even in 1972, when I was here as a student, I could count on the underground to get from point A to point B reliably. And the bus system as well, although for me the underground, the metro system, is more reliable, más fiable, in reaching your destination on time. Because sometimes the buses get caught in traffic problems, but the underground doesn't. And so, and I use it today. I use it to come to Onda Madrid, to come to the studios of Telemadrid Radio Onda Madrid. I use the underground, and I travel from Lista. I travel to I can't remember the name of the station I go to Colonia Jardín, and then I catch the Metro Ligero, and then come to here. And so it's an interesting trip. Anthropologically, for me, it's a very interesting trip. But what was happening in Madrid in 1983, besides the expansion of the metro system, there was a growing problem with drugs. You may remember a rising heroin epidemic, like heroína and things. There were some problems, yes. But there were new neighborhoods growing all over. And Alcorcón was growing, Getafe was growing, Móstoles was growing, Fuenlabrada was growing. But even in the high upscale neighborhoods or communities like Aravaca and Pozuelo and Majadahonda and Las Rozas, and everywhere, Madrid was growing. It was growing. And there was a lot of flooding in Madrid at certain times, but Madrid was and still is a fascinating city. Internationally, what was happening in 1983? The typical things of the Cold War. By the way, you may remember the Korean Airlines when a Soviet jet shot down. Derribar con fuego antiaéreo is to shoot down. Shoot is disparar. Down is derribar. So to shoot down. A Soviet jet shot down a Korean Airlines flight traveling from Alaska to Korea, to Seoul, South Korea. 269 passengers died on that. And that escalated the tensions. Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States at that time. And NATO was growing. Spain entered NATO, I think, in 1982. Yes, so Spain was a member of NATO in 1982. And the U.S., not much was happening. The economy was starting to pick up, and it would later positively impact the the Spanish economy and the European economy. Ronald Reagan was placing pressure on the Soviets because he pushed forward with the initiative called Star Wars. Star Wars, which is a defense system, a space-based missile defense system aimed at countering Soviet nuclear weapons. And when Gorbachev later in 1985, I believe he became the leader of the Politburo in Moscow, it was just too much for the Soviet Union to keep up with the United States. The United States is a very rich country, and the Soviet Union was never a rich country. It was a powerful country, and it focused 10, 15, or 20% of its GDP in military. But they simply couldn't keep up with the United States, and finally it imploded. Se implosionó. The Soviet Union. And of course, later in 1989, the Berlin Wall fell, and in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed. And I think one of the reasons was Ronald Reagan's insistence on making life difficult for the Soviets. He was in power. Ronald Reagan, from January 1981 to January 1989, and then his vice president, George H.W. Bush, George Bush father, for another 4 years until January 1993. So during that period, the United States was very tough with the Soviet Union. But at the same time, Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and she was very tough with Gorbachev and with the Soviets. And at the same time, Juan Pablo II, John Paul II, the Polish Pope, was in the Vatican, and he was also very anti-communist. So it was a three against one, un trio anti-sovietico, and so finally the Soviet Union collapsed. 1983, but I'll take a short break and be right back.
El Teatro Circo Price se llena de estrellas. No te pierdas el próximo mes de marzo a José Luis Rodríguez el Puma, Great Straits, Orquesta Mondragón, Café Quijano, Sole Jiménez y Juan Valderrama con Orquesta Sinfónica. Entradas ya a la venta en festivalestrellas.com. Todas tus estrellas están aquí.
¿Tienes previsto un traslado? Elige Estebaranz, porque no todas las mudanzas son iguales. Rapidez, garantía y seriedad, nuestros mejores argumentos. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz, a tu lado transportando tus ilusiones.
Llega Art Madrid. Ven a celebrar con nosotros 20 años de arte contemporáneo con 34 galerías y más de 200 artistas nacionales e internacionales. Forma parte de una experiencia única y disfruta de las nuevas tendencias artísticas en fotografía, pintura, escultura, performance y video. Feria de Arte Contemporáneo Art Madrid, del 5 al 9 de marzo en la Galería de Cristal del Palacio de Cibeles.
101.3 y 106 FM, Onda Madrid.
Hello again. All right, let's continue. 1983. What's happening? Well, the typical problems in the Middle East with the bombing of the American barracks in Beirut. Yes, a terrorist attack, and 241 Americans and 58 French soldiers were killed in this incredible terrorist attempt in Beirut, Lebanon. Also, they had the Sikh separatists in India, in Amritsar. And a lot of other things were happening. Ah, by the way, do you remember Raul Alfonsín? Well, he was elected president of Argentina after the military dictatorship, La Junta Argentina. Yes, you remember Jorge Videla in 1978 in the World Cup The World Cup in 1978, many people in Spain still remember it, basically for two reasons. Mario Kempes scoring the goals in the final. He scored two goals, I believe, in the finals against the Netherlands. La Holanda sin Johan Cruyff, he refused to go because of the junta. for political reasons. So Neskins and van der Kerkhoff and company was a very good team, but Argentina won. But most people in Spain remember the 1978 World Cup because of el no gol de Cardeñosa, Julio Cardeñosa, you remember, playing against Brazil. He was practically standing in front of the goal, and the goalkeeper was not there, and he was not able to score the goal. That ruined his career and probably is a mark on his life. I still remember, you know, in 1978, this is 46 years ago. Wow. Or 47 years ago, and we still remember el gol de Cardeñosa, el no gol de Cardeñosa, pobre. He was a very good player, by the way. I think he was playing for Betis or Sevilla. I can't remember. One of the two teams in Seville. He was an excellent football player. Midfielder. Midfielder is centrocampista. Midfielder. And he missed that. But later in 1983, well, the junta was no longer in power. Videla stepped down and then Maceda took over. And then Leopoldo Galtieri, you remember. And during the term of office of Leopoldo Galtieri, Argentina decided to take the Falkland Islands, or Las Malvinas, as you say in Spanish, to take the Falkland Islands. And that was a mistake, because that brought on, of course, the British, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, you don't do something like that when Margaret Thatcher is in power. If you're going to, how do you say, echar un pulso? How do you say echar un pulso in English? A showdown, to engage in a power struggle, to challenge. If you're going to challenge or to face off against Margaret Thatcher, you're going to lose. just like now with Donald Trump. Many countries are less interested in doing things because they don't trust Donald Trump, or they fear Donald Trump. They didn't fear Joe Biden. And so, but Leopoldo Galtieri decided, because of the unpopularity of the Junta Argentina, he decided to, that they say, the experts say, one of the reasons was to improve the popularity of the government, to take the Falkland Islands, which belong to Great Britain. But they are very close to Argentina in the southern Atlantic. And Margaret Thatcher said, well, no way, Jose. And she sent her expeditionary force, you know, what, 12,000 kilometers or 14,000 kilometers to the South Atlantic, and expelled the Argentines, and that brought on the fall of the junta of Argentina. Galtieri lost his job, and he and his cohorts were out of power. And in 1983, the first democratic elections after several years in Argentina took place. And so 1983 was a year of... Oh, it's an interesting year. For science and technology, the first mobile telephones came out. The first cell phones. Motorola, you remember? Yes, video games were popular. Yes, the Return of the Jedi came out. And you remember Michael Jackson's Thriller. It was very popular. But in any case, the Cold War. So the conclusion was 1983 was a year of high tensions because of the Cold War, conflicts in the Middle East and in Latin America. But there were a lot of advancements in technology and in culture. Yes. And for 1983, for me in Madrid, I was enjoying it. Yes, every day I got up very early. I got up at 5:30, had a coffee, read the newspaper or watched the news on television as I was having my coffee. In 1983, yes, I left home because I had a class at 7 o'clock. Si no posible empezar una clase inglesa a 7 de la mañana. But I had a class at 7 o'clock with the sales manager of Coca-Cola in Josefa Valcarcel Street. So every morning I got up and drove to Josefa Valcarcel, which was not very far from Virgen del Val. It was very, very close, maybe 10 minutes at the most. And there with José Luis Cayón, excellent man. He was, I have very, very good memories. We spent maybe 1 year together. And from 7 to 8 in the morning, he was the sales manager of Coca-Cola, España. And his English was pretty good, but he wanted to improve it even more. And so he was a hard worker. So he wanted his English class from 7 to 8 in the morning. And so he could start working at 8 o'clock. And crazy me, I said, okay, of course. I mean, he's a sales. That was my first student in Coca-Cola. So I decided to do the program or the class myself to open it. Yo era el abridor de nuevos clientes. So I was the opener. And we had a good time. And then after that, I usually drove to Getafe or to Leganés to continue teaching and managing, because they were my two most important clients. I also had classes in Ampere and in unos laboratorios en Bom. Y también en Fosfórico Español. That's an interesting Fosfórico. Also in Standard Electrica, I remember now. Yes, in Standard Electrica, I gave class to the asesor jurídico. Yes, Miguel Cerván, excellent person. I've had the good fortune to meet a lot of top class people in Spain, because I have given class to many top managers in important organizations: Standard Electric, Alcatel, Coca-Cola, John Deere, Ericsson, Amper, GlaxoSmithKline. I mean, many, many very, very good companies. And the top managers are usually excellent people and excellent professionals. There are a few exceptions, but in general, I would say 80 to 85% or 90% are outstanding people. And so I have benefited from the daily contact I had as the English teacher, sitting opposite the legal director of Alcatel, maybe 3 days a week, for an hour and a half, maybe from 8:30 to 10, because I finished with José Luis Cayón in Coca-Cola, and then I drove to Alcatel, and I spent from 8:30 to 10, maybe twice a week or three times a week. And Miguel Cerván, the asesor jurídico, his English was very good as well, top-class individual. And he put me in contact with Fernando Ledesma, the Minister of Justice. And I began, I remember, from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, 2 days a week or 3 days a week, with the Minister of Justice. Fantastic man. I'm not socialist, but I didn't vote socialist. However, I found him to be a fine person. He was not a member of the Socialist Party. And he's not, I don't think he's a member today. Of course, he was a minister. He was the Minister of Justice for the first González government. The second, I don't remember. But he was a judge. And I spent maybe a year going to the ministry on San Bernardo Street, very next to the old Universidad de Madrid, that old area, Almaniel, in that area, on San Bernardo. And there I gave him class from 10 to 11. And his English was not bad. He was pretty good, his English. Very intelligent man and a very, very good person, very nice person. And And so, and then I usually went out to Getafe or to Leganés to my two most important clients, John Diriberica and Ericsson. But also I said Fosfórico Español. Interesting company. Ácidos fosfórico, phosphoric acid. This is one of the most important elements for fertilizers, fertilizantes. You see, fertilizers, there are three types of nutrients that crops need, los cultivos, nutrientes. What are the three nutrients? They need potassium, nitrogen, and phosphorus. Potassium, nitrogen, and phosphorus. And Fosfórico Español, which was part of El Grupo Cross, based in Barcelona, they had an important factory for phosphoric acid in Huelva. Huelva is a very important, or was or still is, a very important center for the chemical industry, in this case, fertilizer. And there I met Juan Manuel López de Azcona, who's an outstanding individual. I have met many outstanding individuals in Spain through my English classes. I have met them, and because we were speaking in English, these important people and top-class people were more vulnerable. They were trying to express themselves in a language that they hadn't mastered. And so I could see inside their character and their personality and temperament better than their subordinates or their colleagues or even their bosses and even their spouses, I would say, even their wives probably. And we became very good friends because because of the student-teacher relationship, and because I was intelligent enough to be able to talk about their areas of expertise, about law, the legal counsel, or about fertilizers, or about chemicals, about tractors, or about telecommunications, or about advertising, or sales, or finance, accounting. It was very educational experience for me. I've probably learned more or grew more thanks to my students than my students thanks to me. So I think even though my clients paid me and not me my clients, I was the number one beneficiary in this. Quite interesting. I was the number one beneficiary, and I'm very thankful and very grateful to Spain, to Madrid, to the Tejido Empresarial Madrileño y Español, for the incredible experiences I have enjoyed in this country over the last 51 years. Incredible people. I have to go now. The party's over for today, but I'll be back next Sunday, same time, same place. Take care. It's been a pleasure.